All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where in the world you happen to be. Normally, what would happen at this point is I would come on, I would welcome everybody to Web Wednesday, and I would keep my guest waiting in the background. But honestly, I'm just too excited about today. And Chloe and I were just having way too much fun just chatting about things in this fantastic little Broadway musical called Title of Show, which if you, yeah, you should go search it out. But that's a conversation for a different time. But anyway, hi there. Let me do this first. Hi, Chloe.
Hello. Hello. I'm so excited. I can't believe this is my first time on the show. I feel like I'm a spiritual guest of the show, I guess, because I watch it so much.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. That's good. I have one viewer. That's always nice to know.
It's me.
So yeah, so today is going to be a little bit different. That normally we chat about like some web tech or something like that. We're certainly probably going to have some web tech conversations, but today instead is going to be much more focused on probably one of the most common questions that I get asked, and I'm certain it's one of the most common questions that Chloe get asked, which is some variation of how do I get into or what about this and so forth for people that are, you know, thinking about getting into the industry, are just trying to get started in the industry or maybe in it for about a year and trying to figure out, okay, well, what should I do? So it was like, all right, well, let's answer those questions and let's do that on camera. And so when the idea was floated out there, I'm like, the perfect person for this is Chloe. Like, there's just nobody else.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Would it be helpful if I kind of like explained how I got here, how
Absolutely.
I'm sitting here.
Yes.
Because it's strange. I think it's important context to give because, like you said, like people are always asking me, especially during the pandemic, or as I like to call it, the panini, how do I get started? How do I learn to code? My background is in the performing arts, so which is a big reason why Christopher and I were singing right before we went live. I did musical theater for a very, very long time. I grew up in the performing arts. My mom and dad both worked in the performing arts, and I was immersed in that world for a very, very long time. And unfortunately, despite coming from, you know, a lot of computer technology around me and learning how, you know, I had Mavis Beacon teaches typing in school, and we used Microsoft Word, so I knew about Clippy and all of that. I was good at computers, but it was never expressed to me that this could be an industry or a path I could go into. And there certainly weren't any people who looked like me, women specifically. I like to say that the only STEM engineering person that I had in my life was Gadget from Chippendale Rescue Rangers. And if you're not familiar, that is a chipmunk. So like that's not great representation, right? And so I went throughout my life, I did the theater thing. I went to performing arts high school and college, did the actor thing by night, weekend, office admin by day thing, and learned how to code in a boot camp. So I attended Hackbrite in 2016 and graduated from there, and very quickly realized that, you know, I work as a cloud advocate now, but I realized that this industry of developer evangelism, developer advocacy was a really interesting blend of my technology skills and, you know, all these skills that I had in my previous life of performing arts. So I'm here to say truly anyone can code. Like, I used to tap dance. I was the back end of a cow in a musical once, and I'm here working at Microsoft today. So if you're out there and you're thinking like, I don't know, maybe this isn't for me. Like, if you have an interest in STEM or technology, like, truly, there's room for everyone. Anybody can learn to code.
I feel like there's a book title in there somewhere from I went from the back of a cow to working at Microsoft.
I was on a podcast a while ago, and I need to find it because he said something to intro me that I was like, I wish I had thought of that. And he said, from building characters to building developer communities, or like Ooh. Building sets to, and I was like, oh, I have to read that.
Wow.
But there truly is, you know, like, of course, when I first started in this industry, I was thinking, well, there's going to be nothing applicable from my previous life as an actress, especially because I did musicals. I was like, other than, I don't know, channeling my inner Elle Woods from Legally Blonde working in the corporate world, I'm not really sure how this applies. But I found that, like, all of this experience that I've had, and I should also mention, like, y'all can check out my LinkedIn if you want to have a really fun, you know, evening experience later. You can look at.
Hello?
We're back.
Oh, you are. Yes. Okay, perfect. Mm-hmm. Give me one second here, because otherwise people are going to give me I want that. There we go. And I want
There we are. We're back.
We're back. Okay.
Yay.
Finally.
Technology.
Yay. Okay. Let's see. We're on Twitch. I'm curious, are we still on Learn TV? I'm just going to peek right now in the background. This will give you an opportunity to vamp. There we go.
We're okay. Back. We are on Learn TV.
Yes. Beautiful. All right. We are back in all of the spaces. Okay. Cool. Now, unfortunately, I have no idea what it was that you were talking about, but...
I remember it was musical theater applied to tech.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
I was like, okay, and what am I going to do? Tap dance while I whiteboard? Like, there's no freaking way. I mean, it would definitely get their attention for sure. But I thought, I'm putting that in my past. I don't have to think about anything I did in theater again. I'm starting with a fresh blank slate. But now that I've been working in the industry for a while, I use pieces of my theater degree, of my experience as an actor, even just being able to present comfortably and, you know, effectively engage with people and to get a point across. It's been kind of interesting, and building developer communities, especially like community theater developer communities, very similar. So it's been very lovely to, now that I've been in the industry, realize, oh, that whole like 20 plus years of my life was actually pretty useful.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny to hear you mention about, like, you know, about like doing a presentation, that I've long believed that if you're doing a presentation, well, you're doing a presentation, like you're delivering a performance. And so I do sometimes think that, you know, I've got some, you know, buried deep down inside of me, some like secret wish to have been, you know, an actor or a stand-up comedian or something. And so I really do try to channel a bit of that energy, because you have to make sure that you're not only just conveying information, but that you're keeping the audience engaged, which obviously, you know, is very much what you're trying to do when you act.
It's so, like, it's such a, I feel that it's such an important skill that is so undervalued in tech. And I say this as someone who obviously came the opposite way. Like, I came into tech a lot later, but it's very fascinating to me. I used to give this keynote. I gave it at Live 365, I guess 2 years ago now. That's called The ROI of LOLs. Credit to my boyfriend for the name of that talk. But it was all about the importance of entertainment in technology. So specifically, you know, if you've ever heard of memory hooks are basically these triggers in our brain that help us remember things. And sometimes that can be a song or something that's funny or emotionally draws you in. So the examples I love to give are Sesame Street. I mean, like, we learn all of our numbers and spelling and everything from color and sound and everything like that. Mm-hmm. People like Don Draper, if you've ever watched Mad Men, when they deliver a presentation and it's very emotional, like, that is another kind of memory hook. And then I think personally my favorite memory hook is comedy. I if you follow me on Twitter, I'm always just tweeting really bad dad jokes and puns. And I try to bring that into all the things in the technology that I do, because Azure Functions are cool, but aren't they a little bit cooler if you like incorporate a fake boyfriend into it? Or like, hey, cognitive services, let's slap some Mario Kart on there and see like how this works. And I think especially working with students, because I should also mention I work on the Next Generation Experiences team of Christopher here. And I think a big part of getting students engaged and interested in computer technology and STEM, and a big reason why maybe I wasn't super engaged, was it didn't seem, well, I guess it wasn't exposed to me that it was an option. But if someone had said like, hey, come over here and check out this like really cool, like, I don't know, use IoT to make a robot, I would have been like, yeah, tell me more.
Absolutely.
So the more fun you can have, I call it the spoonful of sugar technique. Like if you are having fun while you're learning, you're not only going to learn it better, but you're going to remember it, yep. Which is the most important part.
Yeah, 100%. Like before joining Microsoft, I spent many, many, many years as a tech trainer. And I firmly believe that if I could get my class laughing, then yes. I had them. Like now they're actually learning. Now they're actually paying attention to me. And on top of that, like you said, like now they're having fun. And it was one of the biggest reasons why I kept getting asked to go back to certain training centers and so forth was because of exactly that, that people would show up, they would learn, but they were also just having a really good time. And that's what you want. So yeah, I could, you know, absolutely stand up, you know, Ben Stein style and teach you that the rote economics, but nobody's going to actually be interested. Everybody's literally just going to be, you know, laying on their desk, drool coming out of their mouth, because it's boring if you try to do it that way. So making them laugh, giving them another reason to you know, stay connected, that I do an awful lot of weird references. And that does become a little bit of a challenge when I travel outside the US. Because of course, believe it or not, there are countries outside the US. There's actually, you know, like culture
and
outside
actually,
the US.
Comedy does not play well in the UK at all. I'm a UK citizen. I have a passport there. And I learned that the hard way. Like audiences, even if you go to a West End, which is their equivalent of Broadway, they clap at different times during shows. They laugh. So like it's fascinating culturally, like exactly what you said, like you engage people and connect with people so much differently depending on what audience you're in front of.
yeah, exactly. And so if you're like trying to bring those little references, it obviously then doesn't work. Or, you know, like you said, just like cultural differences definitely wind up coming into play there. And so there was something else that dawned on me earlier, and something tells me that you're going to agree with this, is probably the best thing that I ever did for my presentations for my training career was I took a series of improv classes that, if you're at all familiar with Comedy Sports, they've got, you know, a handful of them throughout the country, but they do little improv classes. And so I did a series there, and it made me such a better presenter because it forced me to just like think real quick on my feet, you know, even just like that basic yes and, just to keep things moving is so important, because, you know, you'll try and tell a joke and it will fall flat, or you will you'll try to explain something and half the class or half the audience just doesn't understand what it is that you're saying. And so now you then and there need to come up with another way that you can go in and explain that. And so it made me such a better presenter by having done that set of improv classes.
And there's such a, like, it's interesting that you say that. So we talk a lot about improv on the show 8-Bits that I do with Brandon, because Brandon has also taken improv classes. And I think it shows, because he's a great co-host. And, like, I think there's so much that goes into improv with, like, being a generous, you know, co-host or scene partner, or even just how many times have you ever seen a live presentation or not live presentation where the demo doesn't work, or something, some kind of technology. How do you deal with that? How do you manage that? And I've seen this in action. Like I've seen this in real life. Like I've seen audiences, and I think maybe I'm hyper aware of this because I come from the performing arts. So I'm always looking at the audience, trying to get like a survey of how people are feeling. But a couple years ago, I should also say, like, when I first started in tech, it was crazy to me. Like I would go to these meetups in Silicon Valley. I was working at a startup in Mountain View, and people would go to meetups where the presentation was really like this. And they'd be so disengaged and not interested or passionate about what they were talking about. And I, you know, very early in my career started giving talks, and people were like, this is such a great presentation. I'm like, thank you. I appreciate that. I have been doing the presenting thing a very long time. So basically how I sold myself as a junior, you know, candidate when I was out of my boot camp, had just learned to whiteboard and code, you know, I knew that these developer advocate candidates coming in, their tech experience was here, but their public speaking experience was down here. And I was the opposite. And that's really how, look, like, you're not going to find another technical person. Like, you have to fill in my gap backwards. But, like, I think I'm a worthy investment. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, that really proved useful. Like it really, if any hiring managers out there are listening, like hire non-traditional background candidates. Like they're some of the best. It's not like you're hiring just some junior, you know, who's never worked before. They have a whole wealth of experience behind them. But I should also say, I vividly remember I was at a talk once, and it's important, like you learn things in improv and acting classes, not only about how to act and how to improv, but how to work with your audience. Cause like the audience, when you give a tech talk or if you do a musical or if you're doing improv, the audience is a participant in what you're doing as well. And a lot of your, you know, you basically know if you're doing well based on your audience, right? Like yeah. Be it viewership or are people laughing? That's been a hard thing for me during the Panini is how do I know if people are enjoying themselves? I actually really miss a live audience for just to see the nodders in the audience, you know, who are just kind of like, shout out to every nodder out there. But I was watching this talk in Boston and this guy was, he got on stage and he, oh my gosh, it was a death sentence from the beginning because he was like, I'm really sick. Like he prefaces the whole thing by being like, I'm really sick. I apologize that I'm really sick. So like right out the gate, just, okay, cool, dude, it's fine, you know. And I don't know about you, Christopher. I know that we both have ADHD and we both are very sensitive to like interaction and stuff. It is my biggest pet peeve in the world when I'm at a talk, and thank goodness I haven't had to do this for a year, and someone goes, turn to the person next to you.
Oh no.
I'm like looking for the exit sign, getting away. So two strikes on this guy, right? Like he starts out saying, prefacing that he's sick, and he's like, it wasn't turned to the person next to you. It was, you know, shout out this answer if you know it kind of stuff too. Like that stuff is just really difficult for me because I like to just disappear in the corner and, yeah. And not have anybody pay attention to me. So it was so fascinating watching this guy's talk because he was, you know, coughing, sneezing through the whole thing, being very, you know, belligerent to his audience, being like, okay, and what is the blah, blah, blah? Come on, you guys, speak up. Like was getting angry at us. And it was such in the moment, it was awkward. And I wanted to get out of there. But looking back on it, it was such an interesting lesson on like, you need to treat your audience well, like, or they're going to not want to be there and leave. And it really says something to me. Like, I, of course, not everybody is going to come in and have the bells and the whistles and the confetti and the blah, 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 like doing a tap dance for everyone while they present. But just the smallest amount of like, thoughtfulness towards your audience to like make them comfortable and make sure that they're comfortable learning is so important. Yes. And I love that I'm seeing more of it, but we could stand to have so much more of it in yeah. this industry.
I agree completely. And you know, it's one of the things I remembered when I used to do a lot of, you know, like again, presenting full time was what I did. And so frequently I would hear the, I can't believe you're technical because of the fact, like I was that, you know, outgoing and that I had that, I had a good delivery style, and it was because they were very used to exactly what it was that you were talking about is somebody who's just getting up there and is either, you know, just very rote or doesn't know what to do. And so they're literally just like beating the audience into submission.
Right.
And are really surprised when they're not, when they're not following along. There was somewhere else I wanted to pivot from there, and halfway through my sentence, it left my brain, and now I can't. Oh, there was something else that he did that I definitely wanted to call out, which, you know, if you're ever going to do a presentation, don't ever do this, is don't ever get up on stage and immediately start downplaying yourself. Like, yes, there's a certain level of self-deprecation and self-deprecating humor that works. And it's something that I will absolutely do. But if you get up on stage and you're immediately going, I'm sick, or you immediately go, I really don't know the product, or like anything like that, what you're not like setting, you know, expectations, like you're not setting yourself a low bar to make it easier for yourself to clear and make the audience like you. What you're really doing at that point is you're in a lot of ways just telling the audience, hey, I'm not going to do a good job. Don't pay attention. That's really right. What you wind up saying there. And so like to start out with the I'm sick, which, you know, side note, if you're sick, stay home.
Yes.
If we've
yes.
learned nothing else over the last year. But yeah, but like, yeah. Don't get up and do that because you're going to destroy your presentation right from the start.
Well, I think it's honestly, it's wild to me that I use used to and still give a keynote on the fact that, you know, entertainment is important and that we need to have fun. Like, I think that's crazy, right? That there's a keynote needed in this industry where it's like, it's okay to have fun. But
it's okay to laugh.
It's fine. But in my presentation, I had this slide that was like, engineers are people too. They like to have fun. And I think we seriously forget that all the time. And I feel very lucky that I work with students now. And I feel like there's a little bit more creative space to have a little bit more whimsy and fun and tongue-in-cheek stuff with students, especially to get them engaged. But I mean, I think about this all the time. Like, I watch a lot of cartoons and you know, did a lot of children's theater, and so much of it is like flashy colors and songs and, you know, all of this stuff that keeps you engaged. And I'm willing to bet that as adults, like, we're on our phones all the time. Like, the minute, like, we who among us has not looked at Twitter while we're in a meeting, right? So I think about that a lot when I'm presenting topics and when I'm teaching technology topics, that like, it's not even just a fun thing for them to be engaged. I know that if I don't do this, they're not going to pay attention, because right. That's just how our brains work, right? So I think that's even important when you're designing technical content, or like creating a blog post, or if you're doing something big like a workshop or a tutorial, that so much can be like keeping in mind, like, you know, you don't have to put like a GIF every 5 seconds or something like that, but just your passion will shine through if you're passionate about it. But like, making that extra effort. So if you're scared of public speaking, or maybe that's not something you're very good at, highly recommend investing in taking the time to, like Christopher said, take a class, you know, watch other speakers. I think you can learn a lot from watching other people present too. But it's such a, honestly, I think it's been one of the most valuable skills, above programming, obviously, to get my job at Microsoft, because, you know, like, there's to be able to like build developer communities, like, is a very, people do it in all different sizes and shapes and flavors of it. But I think like there's ways to have fun and do this. And I feel very lucky that Microsoft lets me do that.
Absolutely. And I want to highlight one real quick little thing here. Then there's a, like, a perfect question, is like, if you're getting up and you're doing a whiteboard in an interview, to a certain extent, you are now doing a presentation. And so, like, you know, go take an improv class, or find somebody that you like, and, you know, Don't copy them, but figure out ways that you can emulate them, or figure out, okay, well, what parts is it of their presentation style that I really like, and try and incorporate that into the way that you present. Like, I'm a huge fan of Penn and Teller. I'm a huge fan of Penn Jillette. And so there's certain parts of his pattern and of his delivery style that I've kind of worked into how it is that I do it, to like find something like that you like. But here's like a perfect question from McCorfa. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's always tough with screen names. Is what's a reasonable amount of code that you would wind up putting into a presentation? Let's start there. Then he's got like a perfect follow-up.
Okay. So like a presentation to talk or something?
Yeah. Let's say for a talk. Yeah.
Yeah, well, my favorite resource for this that I think about a lot is, there's a wonderful video by a friend of ours, PY, who works at Square, and it's called, I think it's like Tech Talks something. I will find the link for it during this, while we're doing this. But it's basically a how-to on how to make good presentations and Tech Talks. And it's all about like, hey, here is too much text for a slide. Like, I actually had stolen a lot of the info he puts in there about like, you can put a bunch of code on the slide and then highlight it, like, as you talk about the different pieces of the code to tell the overall story. And like, sometimes it makes more sense when you're talking about a certain thing to just have an image on the screen, so people are paying attention to what you're saying. So there's a lot of interesting tricks that I've found. You never want a slide. And he has a great example of this in the talk. I'll find it right now. He has a great example that he starts out this talk with. It's called How to Give Good Tech Talks. He's given it at DroidCon, and there's an internal version of it as well. And I'll find that for y'all. But what's really interesting is he starts it out telling this story, and I don't want to give too much of it away, but I think about this whenever I see a very verbose slide that just has too much text on it. About, he was watching this presentation live at a conference, and this guy had a terrible slide behind him. It had like oh my gosh, way too many words, way too many bullet points. It was just so difficult to read. And there was a live Twitter feed going on each side of the banner, but he couldn't see it because this guy was presenting. And all of the tweets were just how bad the slide was. So it makes a difference, right? Like, people need to be able to read your slides. People need to know, like, you know, what point are you actually trying to get across? And I see this a lot with students. When they're presenting, it's usually like the number one piece of feedback that I give to students is there's too much text here. Like, we've been mentoring the Imagine Cup students. And I think, like, there's this tendency to think I need to put all the words on my page, almost like closed captioning, to make sure that every word that I say in this presentation is captured. But the slides are more, they should be viewed as more of like a supplement to what you're doing, right? Yeah. So code-wise, I'll find this video right now, but code-wise, you really only want them to be looking at like what they should be looking at. So there's very useful ways that you can either highlight your code as you talk through a larger piece of it, or Christopher, I'm sure you have recommendations as well.
Yeah, 100%. Like all the points that Chloe made there, especially about having too much code on a slide, is important. And I think, like, all up, whenever you're thinking about doing a presentation, you want to make sure that you have enough to get your point across and not so much that you wind up confusing the audience. So, like, how much code should you have? It really is just like, okay, well, what's going to help me get my point across? So if it is something that's going to be more complex, you not only just want to break that down into slide to slide to slide, but you also then want to figure out ways that you can start to walk through the application sort of chunk by chunk by chunk and really explain what it is that's going on there.
And it's like, truly like storytelling.
Yes.
Like, and I think like a lot of people get really lost. I've seen a lot of presentations before. Oh, and the talk is called DroidCon NYC 2017 Tech Talks for Humans. I'll drop a link to it in the chat for Christopher to share.
Okay.
But I've seen a lot of talks before where people will be presenting a product or something, like pitch decks or something like that, or usually tell a story, right? Like a pitch deck will be like, this is our product and this is what it does. But I find that technologists, like engineers, they're so passionate about certain pieces of code and certain features that there's this tendency to like dive really deeply or too deeply into one part, but we need to know the whole story. Cause like you as the engineer have an expertise on this code base, but like we have no context.
Right.
And that's important to keep in mind.
I want to pivot right off of that because there was another question that McWarfa mentioned, which is, given you are excited about an idea, concept, or subject, do we have to be an absolute expert on a concept or subject to allow ourselves to present it anyway?
I hope not, because I've been doing this wrong for like 5 or 6 years.
Same here.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, some of the best talks that I've seen have been beginner talks. And the best part about beginner talks, and this is advice that was given to me when I first started my career, about beginner content in general, is we need beginner content. UI changes all the time. Product features change all the time. It always, even as someone who's like super experienced in something, great to hear a beginner's talk, like to get perspective. Oh my gosh, yes, please. Like, because there's less advanced people than there is. Everyone is a beginner at some point. So please, please, please get beginner talks.
and on top of that, just because you know a subject really, really, really well does not mean that you're a great presenter at it. This is one of the challenges that I see with conferences in general. And I'm going to try and be very careful because I don't want to get myself into trouble here. But I do find a lot of times when companies send PMs to go deliver a presentation or an engineer to go deliver a presentation, they're sending it because they feel like, oh, they've earned this right, or that, oh, this person knows this product really, really well, so this is going to be the perfect person to then get up and deliver it. Yeah. They're not. Like, knowing a product versus being able to explain a product, these are two different skills. They can absolutely exist inside of the same person, but those are two different skills. And so I would much rather listen to somebody who's delivering, you know, maybe even a talk that's a little bit beyond them. So maybe they really only know a product about 200 level, but maybe they're delivering a 300 level talk. If they're a good presenter, I'm much happier listening to this person than I am the person that knows it to a 400 level, but is, you know, trying to deliver to a 300, but they're just putting me to sleep, or they're confusing me because of the fact that they just can't explain it really well.
I tweeted the other day something like, pinch hitters, but for meetings, we need pinch hitters, but for presentations. It truly, like, I've seen this in the wild. I won't name and shame the company, but back in the day, I was at this product launch announcement in San Francisco, like in this, you know, very fancy venue with the caviar and the beverages and lots of press people and technology folks. And it was this huge announcement for this new feature that they were adding. And once it came time to do the presentation, the whole event was so elaborate, but the presenter, you could tell he did not want to be presenting this. Like, there's certain, you know, there are people who are deathly afraid of giving presentations out there. And this was a, you know, CEO or like someone who led this team, and it was important that they, for the branding, gave it, but it made me not excited about the product. In fact, it made me a little frightened for this person. And I think that's, you know, that there's so much, like, I think about this casting a lot, right? Because that's the world that I came from. And if you're not familiar with like what casting is, it's, you know, you have to audition to get into shows or musicals or theater. And, you know, here's the thing, like, we all have different, like, expertise and specialties. I am not a dancer. In fact, I'm a terrible dancer. And if someone called me up and was like, Chloe, do you want to be in a chorus line? I'd be like, do you want to lose money on your show? Or is this a comedic version of it? Because I cannot dance. But I know that about myself. And I think that's very important that, like, if you recognize these traits in yourself and you're like, you know what? I am not a good public speaker. It is something that you can work on, and that luckily, you know, there's a lot of resources out there that you can identify that. But it always makes me, casting, I think, when you're presenting something, making sure that you put your best foot forward or put the right player in, a baseball analogy, right? Like, if you need someone, oh my gosh, hopefully my dad's not watching. He'll get mad that I'm getting these terms wrong. But, you know, if you need someone to hit a home run, like, don't put someone who's the fast runner instead. You know, like, there's people who are good for different jobs. And I think, you know, it's good that people get experience, but you got to think about these things. Like, all right, we are going to present this technology. Like, what is the best, clearest, most comfortable way? Because it can be uncomfortable sometimes to watch people who are uncomfortable presenting to get this point across. And, you know, I used to work as an executive assistant, and I would see companies, you know, people pitch an investor, and like the presenter could make or break if they went forward with funding. And I think, you know, it's like we keep saying, it's so undervalued and needs to be thought about so much. Casting is important.
Yes, yes. But like you highlighted, and Kodnastron in the chat highlighted this as well, is that this is a skill that you can absolutely learn. Like, go take an improv class. Go to Toastmasters. Like, I promise you that there's a Toastmasters somewhere near where you live. You know, get connected with them. Start to work that skill. And this is something that I'll always remember from Scott Hanselman, is he talked about how he started and how he practiced. And it was doing a lot of community group presentations, or like going down to, you know, a senior center, going to a school where they're so desperate sometimes for people to come in and explain technology, that if you're willing to volunteer a bit of your time, they will give you that opportunity to practice, to exercise that muscle. Take those opportunities, because on top of everything else, you know, like, at that point, you've got a captive audience. You've got an audience that's grateful for the fact that you're there. So they're also then going to judge you less. It's going to be a safer space for you to go make mistakes, to go have bad presentations. Because here's the other thing, is you're going to have bad presentations.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
going to present for, you know, the better part of a couple of decades, and you're still going to roll out there, and it's going to appear that this was your first time ever. Like, that's going to happen. This is a skill that you can go out and learn. Yeah.
And like with whiteboarding, even, I think I had a very interesting experience in like interviewing as an engineer, because I think for most folks, in my Hackbrite cohort. So like I had a pretty big epiphany when we built this final project and you know, all of the women in my cohort were very nervous to present. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like the coding part was hard. This is like the best easiest part. Like, and so I think that's like was very important when I went into these whiteboarding interviews, because I wasn't nervous about presenting. I was nervous about, do I know how to solve this algorithm? So like I had kind of half of that eliminated for me, which at least made me, you know, feel a little freer to like not have to worry about having an audience on me. But it's just like you said, like these, I think people think of presentation skills and public speaking as giving a talk, but it really does apply to whiteboarding, getting internal buy-in, like as an employee, like maybe there's a project or something that you want to advocate for, like being able to like convey that message in a you know, way that is not only, it doesn't have to be entertaining, like you don't have to be doing a jig while you're, you know, presenting something to leadership, but people will pay attention. Like I think it's so, everybody out there, go take an improv class, truly, or listen to improv. If you don't listen to Comedy Bang Bang or some of these really great improv podcasts out there, they're worth a listen, and it can help you a lot.
Yeah. 100%. And you actually, you highlighted yet another great point of like, this is going to help you out internally. That I had this experience on Monday, is I had an idea to change how we do a particular workshop. And I had to then present this idea to, you know, a handful of our colleagues. And my whole goal, of course, is let me win them over. Let me get them all excited about this. I'm literally now doing a performance. I'm now doing a presentation because I'm trying to sell them on my idea and why my idea is important. Like even if you're not actively job searching, you're not actively whiteboarding, that you're not actively getting up in front of a room full of people, you remember what that felt like? Anyway.
Yeah, right.
you know, even if you're not doing that, you're still going to find yourself doing many, many, many presentations.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting now, because we, now that we take all these meetings online, we're all on camera all the time, right? So like, this was also something that I feel like I had weird insight to as people started doing more meetings and it became clear that we were home. And I think about all these things, right? Like lighting. Like I was the person pre-pandemic who, when I would go give a talk on stage, would be like, okay, what color is the curtain? I don't want to blend in the curtain, so I'll bring a color other than red or black. Like there's just these things that are ingrained in me as a performer that I think I take for granted a lot. Like they're just second nature. We even had a guest on our show today for 8 Bits, it was like, how do you know how to do all these things? And it's like, honestly, experience. Yeah. And like you learn by doing. And, you know, there's so many subtle parts of my life. Like I took a lighting design class and now I think about all of these different facets of my lighting when I'm presenting. But now we're all, like it used to be you could sit in the meeting and sit in the back and have your notebook and be unnoticed. But like, we're all there now. Like we all have had to learn how to be on, so to speak. And I feel like I was oddly conditioned and a little bit ready for some of this than others.
Yeah. You know, Sean brings up a really interesting point here, which is very true, especially when it comes to like confidence, is, you know, when I speak at conferences, I have to remember that over 90% of the audience doesn't ever want to be a speaker, and because they'd be too afraid. You're then already doing something that they're not doing, that they don't want to do.
Yeah. Well, it's okay. This is the number one piece of advice that I give to anyone who has stage fright. I had a like epiphany towards the end of my theater career. I had the opportunity to be on the other side of the audition table. So I was so used to auditioning for people and performing for people, but I never really was on the decision-making end of things. But once I went to that other side of the table, so like picture American Idol, y'all, like the Randy, Simon, Paula, whoever is judging nowadays. I got to be on that side and I realized, oh, I want every single person coming through this door to be good. Like I don't want anybody to be bad. And that triggered something in me that made me realize and made me a lot less afraid to do public speaking or perform in a show or audition, which is like a great skill. That's basically an interview for an actor if you're not familiar. But I realized like when have you ever sat down for a presentation? First of all, you bought a ticket to that event. So like you're never performing in front of an audience that's held captive, unless maybe you're at an all hands or something and people have to be there, right? But like all of those people watching you want you to be good. Like, unless you have some nemesis out there, which like maybe, you know, explore that, figure out what's going on there. Or if like it's American Idol and we like want some that's part of American Idol, right? That like there's some bad people on there. But every time you ever watch a live presentation, you're never in a situation where you're like, I want that person to fall. I want them to forget their lines. I want them to their presentation or demo to not work. And I think that's important to remember as a nervous person is literally no one here wants me to fail except for like maybe some villain that like has it out for me. And I've kept that with me ever since then. And I think, you know, people ask me all the time, do you get stage fright? And I'm like, no. Like first of all, I've been doing this literally almost like 30 years. Like I'm 31, I've been on stage since I was basically 2 years old. But also like in what universe, like what is there to be afraid of is what I always ask myself. Like I should also preface this y'all by, I've been in some of the most embarrassing situations on stage. So like anything that would happen to me
back
in tech,
the cow.
Oh my gosh, back in the cow. I would say Shrek the Musical, still having a little bit of green makeup on my face and hands, just so many things. I've had my dress rip on stage. I'm at this point now where I'm like, oh, the worst thing that could happen is my demo doesn't work. And then I have to kind of like figure out what to do, which always have backup video of your demo. Another tip out there. But that I think is so, so important to keep in mind is like the audience wants you to do good. They came to your talk. They decided to see what you're doing. So always, always, always keep that in mind if you're feeling scared.
Absolutely. Although I have to admit, it was interesting to hear you say that you don't get stage fright. I still do, even today, get some level of stage fright. Now, granted, a lot of that is situational. So if it's like the first time that I'm delivering a particular presentation, I will get stage fright. If, you know, depending on like the size of the audience, I will get stage fright. But I'll still, like to this day, get a rush every single time that I like turn on the cameras. Like every single time that it's, you know, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where in the world you happen to be. Like I'm still getting a rush and I still have like a little bit of nervousness that's like hanging out in the back of my brain. And I try to do my best to really just like steer into that energy and to try to use that to, you know, to really then bring more energy into my presentation, because the audience will reflect whatever it is that you give to them. And that's, you know, even more important when you're doing an online presentation. And it's, you know, like you mentioned that if you have an audience, it's generally speaking easy to figure out how you're doing, because you've got people right in front of you that are either, you know, nodding or laughing or exactly, you know, doing whatever it is. I always love when there's a person that's sitting, typically sitting up in the front row, and all that they really want to do is just be a cheerleader. Like they're literally just up there rooting you on. Like I love that person. That person needs to be like in every presentation that I do. But anyway, they're always going to reflect back that energy. And that's especially true when you're doing something that's online, especially because, again, you really can't see what it is. And when you're online, it's so easy to go, oh, okay, let me go look at Twitter instead. So I try to channel that and really just use that to bring more energy into my presentation.
Okay, I did lie. I did get super nervous once. And it was recently. In the last year, I was so starstruck, Christopher. I got to ask Bill Nye a question. It was literally 5 minutes on screen, but I was shaking. Like, so I will admit, it does. I think maybe I get very starstruck around people, maybe. But like, or not even, but that was a crazy thing, right? That I couldn't get over. So I was like, it's just a video. It's not even, like, I need to chill out. But I think I totally agree. I mean, I think especially when I give a new presentation, and I have ADHD, so I've likely made the slides about an hour before I've completed them. And I think there's so much of that, like channeling that, you know, turning that adrenaline into like positive adrenaline can really like fuel you out the gate to like help get you there. But it really is, it can feel sometimes, especially with a big audience, like back in the days where we would give presentations to people in the same room. It's sort of like I use it almost like my jump start into it, like jumping out of the plane kind of energy.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing that's definitely worth highlighting is the rush that you get, especially when you know that you've nailed a presentation. That part never gets old. The day that I stop getting that rush, the day that I stop getting that adrenaline, that dopamine hit after I'm done delivering a presentation, be it online or in person or otherwise, is the day that I stop doing this. It's a fantastic feeling, and there's nowhere else that I know of to get that type of, for want of a better way to put this, like a legal high. Like, that's really what you're looking for there.
I will admit that during the pandemic, I started streaming, and which I love, and live coding used to make me very nervous. I think one as a woman on the internet, really scared and bracing myself for like how that would go down. But I think it's a very vulnerable act to, like, you know, you and I are very used to presenting workshops and topics and like have a script, so to speak, and like we know what's going to go on. But it's been a very almost like improv, like to go online and say, okay, today, because for anybody who's not familiar, like, you know, my role as a cloud advocate has changed a lot during the pandemic, because I used to go out and present and give talks on things, and it was sort of like a one-to-many presentation. And now I feel like with Twitch and being able to stream and live code, you know, I'll just have my VS Code up with my video next to me. It was sort of this like rebellious act, like, and I was kind of frightened because I was like, what if I go online? Because we've all coded before, and some days are great, and then other days you want to throw your computer out the window because, oh my gosh, like, am I a programmer? Why is
maybe
this not working?
Maybe most days semicolon. You want to throw the computer out the window.
Yeah, truth. So I think, like, I always am trying to do new things and, like, get myself out of my comfort zone. But, like, I will say, like, live streaming coding made me very nervous at first because I think, like, there's not only – you have to not only keep the audience engaged, but you're also like trying to program something. But what's been lovely about it, I will say, as we're experiencing with this show, is the chat, right? So like now I feel like I'm pair programming with people literally all over the world. Like, people will tune in from like London or like, you know, wherever. And it's kind of become this unique relationship now with our viewers, I guess we'll call them. Is that it used to be the situation where it's like, hi, I'm Chloe, and I'm going to talk at you for 45 minutes with 15 minutes of questions, and then you can line up afterwards to talk to me. And I really, you know, that, I don't know if we'll ever go back to that. We'll see, because I'm really, really enjoying how many people I'm able to interact with online. So if you're looking for a way to kind of get your feet wet maybe with presenting, try streaming. It's a pretty close to the same thing. I wish I could just see people like laugh. I guess that's what emojis are for, right?
You know, and I, not only is I think that a fantastic idea, but I think it will also then help people learn a very important skill when you're doing a tech presentation, is to keep talking. That, you know, what if you're anything like me, and I know I am, if I'm like really struggling with a problem, a lot of times I'll just get hyper focused on that problem, and I'll lose contact with the audience, or I'll just lose contact with whatever it is that I'm doing. And if you're streaming and you're live coding, because I did that same thing for a little while as well, and you know, I then had to start reminding myself to, like, oh yeah, that's right, keep talking. And so if you're a presenter that's going to actually type out some level of code during your presentation, which I honestly do recommend, it's a very dangerous thing to do, but I feel like the audience is always more engaged if you're typing it than just, like, if you just throw up a screen full of code, I think you can lose everybody really quick. But if you type, again, if you can type fast enough and you feel comfortable enough doing it, I think you're going to keep the audience better engaged there. But if you're doing that, you still want to make sure that you're able to talk. And so just firing up a camera and learning something on camera and like talking while you type, that's a really important skill. And it's like a great way to start to test that. And also, like Chloe said there, is to start to hone those presentation skills.
And if streaming is too scary, just record yourself presenting and watch it back. Like, I watch a lot of my own videos back. Trust me, not because I'm obsessed with myself, because I need to learn from them. Like, I will watch things and be like, ooh, I really liked how I did it that, but I didn't like how I did that. Like, being, it's kind of a really cool, unique thing now that we have. Like, we didn't have this, like, you know, 20 years ago. It's very, very easy to now record yourself and immediately, you know, provide feedback on it for yourself. So I also recommend that for giving a presentation at work, if anything. Like, you can kind of watch it yourself and see, okay, how does this read? How can I improve this? But yeah, but I will also say, you know, it takes time, but it's a worthy investment. And, you know, maybe if you do enough improv, you too can play the back end of a cow.
I think that is the perfect spot to close on. I don't know if you set that up on purpose or not, because we've got about 3 minutes left here. So I do want to mention a couple of real quick things. Number one is Code with Sean, who's a Microsoft MVP, runs a couple of user groups, does ask if you're willing to give a talk at his user group, maybe the ADHD's Guide to Honing Skills or something like that.
Well, yes,
so,
you should.
Yeah.
A DM on Twitter or something.
Yeah, definitely, definitely do that. The second thing is this, is we had initially planned on talking about how to get into the industry and having that conversation. This is the challenge with getting two ADHD people on camera, is we spent an hour talking about or presenting about presenting, which I at the very least, based on the chat that I saw here, I think the audience enjoyed it. I know I enjoyed it. What I would love to do, and I'm going to do this on camera because I'm totally going to put you on the spot here, is if I remember my calendar right, the beginning of September is still open, which is like that perfect, like, ooh, everybody coming back to school.
You're booked out till September?
I'm booked out to September. Yeah. Mallory, if she's watching, just makes magic happen. Yeah, she's amazing. So yeah, so I'm booked out to September. But we can get you to come back on in September. Maybe we could then actually have that conversation about how to get into the industry.
Absolutely. And then maybe you can come on. We'll be having this conversation on several channels, I'm sure. Absolutely. Perfect. I'm back.
I love it. All right. Chloe, thank you so much for coming on and chatting through all of this. We need to do this again soon. Thank you to everybody who tuned in. And hopefully you enjoyed our presentation about presenting. Definitely go follow Chloe on Twitter. She's an amazing follow, and check out all of the things that she does. This is Web Wednesday, and we're back next week with sort of normal programming, but at the very least, it's fun to do these types of things. So thanks for tuning in.
Thanks, y'all.